Good morning. The meeting will come to order. Welcome to the June 4th, 2025 meeting of the Budget and Finance Committee. I am Supervisor Connie Chan, Chair of the Committee. I'm joined by Vice Chair Supervisor Matt Dorsey and Member Supervisor Joan Guardio. Our clerk is Brent Halipa. And I would like to thank Kalina Mendoza from SFGov TV for broadcasting this meeting. Mr. Clerk, do you have any announcements?
Yes, just a friendly reminder to those in attendance to please make sure to silence all cell phones and electronic devices to prevent interruptions to our proceedings. Should you have any documents to be included as part of the file, that should be submitted to myself, the clerk. Public comment will be taken on each item on this agenda. When your item of interest comes up and public comment is called, please line up to speak on the west side of the chamber to your right, my left, along those curtains. And while not required to provide public comment, we do invite you to fill out a comment card and leave them on the tray by the television to your left by the doors if you wish to be accurately recorded for the minutes. Alternatively, you may submit public comment in writing in either of the following ways. Email them to myself, the Budget and Finance Committee Clerk, at brent.jalipa@sfgov.org. If you submit public comment via email, it will be forwarded to the supervisors and also included as part of the official file. You may also send your written comments via U.S. Postal Service to our office in City Hall at 1 Dr. Carlton B. Goodlett Place, Room 244, San Francisco, California, 94102. And finally, Madam Chair, items acted upon today are expected to appear on the Board of Supervisors agenda of June 10th, unless otherwise stated. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. And before I call the items on the agenda today, we just want to friendly reminding the public that for all the items that has budget and legislative analyst report, we will go to department presentation and then the budget and legislative analyst report. And then we'll have this body to present comments and questions, and then we'll go to public comments. And so with that, Mr. Clark, please call item number one.
Yes, item number one is an ordinance amending the administrative code to create a procurement legislative analyst authority for the city administrator, revise or create threshold dollar amounts for application of various contact requirements tied to the statutory minimum competitive amount or statutory federal single audit standard, reorganize, standardize, and narrow Chapter 12F relating to the McBride principles concerning Northern Ireland, including the sunset of the ordinance in 2035, repeal Chapter 12J relating to the city business with Burma, and narrow coverage of and reduce meeting requirements in Chapter 12L relating to nonprofit organizations receiving funds from the city, and amending the Labor and Employment Code to reorganize, standardize, revise exemptions and waivers, narrowing coverage, create threshold dollar amount for application tied to statutorily based minimum competitive amount, and update Article 131 relating to non-discrimination under city contracts, including sunset of that ordinance in 2035, and repeal Article 132 relating to non-discrimination under city property contracts while incorporating some of its provisions under Article 131, reorganize, standardize, revise exemptions and waivers, narrowing coverage, create a threshold dollar amount for application tied to the statutorily based minimum competitive amount, and update Article 151 relating to city procurement of sweat-free goods, including abolition of the sweat-free procurement advisory group and sunset of that ordinance in 2035, and repeal Article 141 relating to salary history in the hiring process of city contractors, Article 142 relating to criminal history in the hiring and employment process of city contractors, and Article 161 relating to earned income credit forms for employees of city contractors. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Vice Chair Dorsey.
Thank you, Chair Chan. So I am a co-sponsor of this, and Board President Raphael Mandelman is the sponsor and main author, and I did want to give him just a kudos for his work on this. I think both of us, many of us who have worked in city government for a long time, have had occasion to come up against some of the contracting processes that are onerous and in some cases really outdated. Burma, for example, is a country that no longer exists, and it's still written into our administrative code. So I just want to express my appreciation for Supervisor Mandelman's work on this to improve and update our contracting and procurement processes, and I'm happy to support this.
Thank you. From what I do understand, Board President Mendelman wants a request for a continuance of this item to July 9th. I also want to recognize the letter that submitted or sent to us from San Francisco Labor Council regarding this piece of legislation expressing specific concerns. I, on the other hand, also actually have concerns about this legislation. While I am in support of streamlining city contracting process and making sure that it works and that it's making ourselves more cost effective and effective just in all across in general when it comes to contracting. I do have concerns about the sweatshop free clause and having it do away with the advisory group. But I think that there are ways to amend this legislation to make it work. And so I appreciate Board President Mendelman's request for continuance so that they can have some of these conversations. I do want to suggest and propose on the floor today that, I am interested to see should this legislation move forward, that whether that, we could add a clause to the existing disbarment law that we have currently. Previously that it was just for criminal conduct. The board a couple years ago unanimously, which I sponsor, is to add it labor violation, including wage theft. But in this case, I think that should anyone that obtain a city contract but found in violation in compliance, including a false affidavit about where they source their materials, and as such could deem qualify for potential disbarment. And so I think that's something that I would like to have consideration and potential drafting should this legislation move forward. And so with that, I think that we will come back and move this to continuance to July 9th date of this committee meeting, but we'll open this to public comments right now.
Yes, we now invite members of the public who wish to address this committee regarding this item number, the continuance of this item number one. Now is your opportunity to approach the lectern. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. And colleagues, I would like to move this item. I would like to continue this item to July 9, and a roll call, please.
And on that motion to continue this ordinance to the July 9th meeting of this committee, Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Member Engardio. Engardio, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have three ayes.
The motion passes. And Mr. Kirk, please call item number two.
Yes, item number two is a resolution approving the direct current fast charging hub lease with the Sky Chargers LLC as tenant and the city and county acting by and through its airport commission as landlord for a term of 14 years with 1 2-year option to extend at the sole discretion of the airport commission and a minimum annual guarantee of $190,000 for the first year of the lease, effective upon approval of this resolution. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And today we have SF Airport here.
Good morning, Chair Chan, Vice Chair Dorsey, Supervisor Engardio, Daniel Sang with San Francisco International Airport. The airport is seeking your approval of a lease agreement with Sky Charger LLC for a direct current fast charging hub, which is located on the south end of the airport on South McDonnell Road at the site that's currently a Trillium compressed natural gas station. The lot is immediately adjacent to Uber and Lyft holding lot and will be open to the public. There will be 24 electrified parking spaces, which can add meaningful range to most of any electric vehicles within 15 minutes or less, or fill 80% of the battery in 30 minutes. Pricing has yet to be established. Skyview Chargers anticipate spending $11.85 million on site development, construction, and equipment. The development period from design to opening will be about 18 months. Rent is the greater of the minimum annual guarantee of $190,000 or a tier percentage rent structure. The term is 14 years with one two-year option to extend, reflecting the significant capital investment that is required. And under the 14-year term of the lease, the airport expects to receive at least $2.66 million in minimum annual guarantee of rent. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We appreciate you coming forward with this. Let's go to public comment on this item.
Yes, we're now opening public comment for this item number two. If we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, I don't see any name on the roster. I don't have any further questions on this particular lease agreement. And so with that, I would like to move this item to full board with recommendation.
And on that motion to forward to the full board with a positive recommendation, Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Member Engardio. Engardio, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have three ayes.
The motion passes. Mr. Kirk, please call item number three.
Yes, item number three is a resolution authorizing the Recreation and Park Department to accept and expend cash and or in-kind grants from the San Francisco Irish Famine Memorial Committee, valued at approximately $500,000 for the San Francisco Irish Famine Memorial Project, effective upon approval of this resolution through notice of substantial completion. Madam Chair.
I understand Rec and Park Department is here, is requesting for this item to continue to September 24th meeting. Is somebody here from Rec and Park can answer just my quick question of why we're continuing this item? Because I understand from the Irish community that it was there was a sense of urgency, but I see no one is here from Rec and Park. Can we come back to this item then? So let's call item number four.
Yes, item number four is a resolution authorizing the director of the Municipal Transportation Agency to execute a contract for the Phase 1 LRV 4 brake system overhaul with Wabtec Passenger Transit to perform the scheduled overhaul of key components of the LRV 4 brake system on 68 vehicles for a contract amount not to exceed approximately $15.5 million and a term of 2 years and 6 months, effective upon approval of this resolution. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And today we have SFMTA here.
Good morning, Supervisors. My name is Joe Speaks. I'm with the SFMTA. I'm project manager on the LRV4 light rail vehicle expansion and replacement project. With me also is John Crispin from Wabtec Passenger Transport. I'll be presenting the item. Briefly, to talk about the fleet itself, the LRV4 fleet, there's a contract with Siemens that started in 2014. It is always planned to be a 10-year plus contract. As a billion-dollar contract, it's one of the largest in the city, and we like to say it's the largest contract you never get to hear about. And we're happy about that because it is on schedule, on budget, and right now it's 75% complete. 165 of the 219 total vehicles under this contract have already been conditionally accepted, and it's almost entirely what you see on the road now. 54 vehicles are remaining, and final delivery is expected in 2026. Phase one was 68 expansion vehicle phase, and that was completed in 2019. Phase two is ongoing now, a phase for 151 replacement vehicles, and that'll be completed, like I said, in 2026. What we're talking about today is the phase one brake overhaul contract. The 68 vehicles in phase one are over 5 years old, so they've reached the end of their 5-year base warranty, and they're reaching now their first overhaul interval. It's time to do the trucks, the couplers. Those are overhauls we're doing in-house. The brakes overhaul we are electing to do out of house. All 68 of these vehicles in phase one have reached that 6-year interval, and it's time to do them. To maintain the warranty that is being extended on these brakes beyond 5 years, SFMTA must maintain its obligation to keep them in a state of good repair. That's required in Siemens maintenance manuals, and that's what we're doing as part of this contract. It's a complex system. We're rebuilding calipers, 10 calipers a vehicle, 230 parts, I can go on the rebuilding the hydraulic power units and replacing the accumulators. It's quite an intensive overhaul of these parts of the brake systems. The overhaul components are to be overhauled to the original standards of the original manufacturer and in a clean room facility in Duncan, South Carolina, where they were originally manufactured. Phase one overhaul is simultaneous with corrective actions that are being required to address warranty defects under the Siemens LRV4 contract. I want to make it clear, when we talk about defects, there's no safety-related concerns. Anytime we talk about brakes and defects, we want to make that clear. This is about unmet contract reliability targets. The contract requires Wabtec and Siemens to go 50,000 miles without breakdowns. And the graph in the lower right shows you that they haven't consistently met that due to some recurring failures. SFMTA is entitled to upgrades and improvements if they don't meet that target. So part of doing this work is keeping them on the hook to meet that contract requirement, as we are trying to be good stewards of the original contract terms and warranties in that. It ensures enforceability of all those warranties and maintains Siemens and Wabtec responsibility for ongoing system performance. And by combining the overhaul activities under this contract with the corrective action in a one program, we're saving money and increasing our availability of the fleet and getting certain things that are obliged under the warranty that we would otherwise have to pay for. Listed there, no cost removal and replacement of the equipment, no cost shipping back to Duncan, and a non-standard 3-year warranty. These are things that we get by combining these and taking advantage of the simultaneous warranty requirements. The contract itself is not to exceed $15.5 million. That's for parts and labor. There's an 18-month project schedule, about one car per week. And as is stated in there, this is a sole source contract with Wabtec Passenger Transport. They're the original equipment manufacturer. We think they have the best opportunity at this point to ensure the quality and optimize the efficiency of this. It delivers the upgrades due to SFMTA to meet the performance targets and address defects. And as I'm focusing on, really, it re-warranties the brake system components and allows us to keep the vendor on the hook to make sure we reach those targets required in the original contract. So, of course, we're here to recommend approval, and I'm available to take questions if you have them.
Thank you.
Item 4 is a resolution that approves a contract between MTA and Wabtec. This contract was awarded on a sole source basis for the reasons described by MTA. And basically, it's allowing MTA to package warranty work on the brakes of light rail vehicles that is being paid for by Siemens for the Wabtec to also complete a brake maintenance work. This contract for $15.5 million only funds that brake maintenance work. The brake defect corrections are being paid for by Siemens and not included in this contract. We detailed the budget of this work on page 4 of our report. The costs appear reasonable relative to other MTA projects. And we note as a policy consideration that, you know, I think it does make sense to use Wabtec in this case. The light rail vehicles have a useful life of 25 years. They need to basically do brake maintenance every 5 years. So each vehicle will need 3 or 4 rounds of additional brake maintenance, where the justification for continuing to sole source this work will no longer be true, because there'll be no more warranty from Siemens that is requiring MTA to use Wabtec. And so for that reason, we're recommending approval of this resolution, but also that MTA evaluate, first doing a competitive solicitation just to ensure the best pricing for future brake overhaul work, and then also evaluating the extent to which the agency can accomplish some or all of this work in-house, and then report to the Board of Supervisors on the results of that procurement and analysis at the next brake overhaul contract.
Thank you. Just kind of curious, and if there are a number of manufacturer for brakes of this type nationally?
There are, brake manufacturers are generally international, and there are 2 main international companies, a possible third. But these brake systems are highly specialized to the individual systems. Having said that, that justifies why some of this first overhaul may be best performed by the original equipment manufacturer, yet we are in agreement with the recommendations of the ledge analyst around the importance of bringing competitive nature to future procurements.
Interesting. So what you're saying is that it seems like the manufacturer for these type of brakes are really not just they're not national in U.S. like manufacturer, they're international ones.
Yes.
Understood. Okay. Thank you. And thank you so much for in agreement that to seek ways to allow competitive bidding. Just best part is still, but I understand it's like rather limiting because like how many people really manufacture these type of equipment. So thank you so much for doing that. And one more question. So 68 out of the 219 vehicles are going to get your first phase of the overhaul. What about the remaining ones? And
because of the delivery schedule,
yeah,
these have aged to the point, the phase one, 68 have aged to the point where it's time for that. The next ones, when they also age to 6 years, will also start an overhaul. And these vehicles are not delivered all at once, they're delivered over time. So it's a phased overhaul here over 18 months. We're about two and a half years away from needing to start that on the phase two vehicles.
And the fact that it's really coming from Siemens, so basically rest of them, you know, once we're done with the 68, remaining of those out of which, can't quite do the math right away,
but
190 something of them, right? Like, so are they going to be remain contained with Siemens and continue on with different phases of brake maintenance and upgrades?
The brake maintenance, the overhauls, uh-huh, is not a Siemens obligation. That is an obligation that comes to the SFMTA to perform. As with overhauls, as is the recommendation, we're both exploring what portion of this work may be appropriate to do in-house for efficiency, and it will depend in some ways on the capabilities we choose to ramp up. We don't have all of the capabilities currently, so we have to look at both how we take some of it in-house and if there are ways to bring some competition to the parts or labor aspects of future procurements, which I think is, you know, again, we're in concurrence with the recommendations for exploring those alternatives.
Got it. So for the remaining 151, now I just did the math correctly, and so for the remaining 151, that is where we're in agreement that we will seek competitive bidding for the maintenance.
That's correct. And as the legislative analyst pointed out, this is the first overhaul of these 68 vehicles. There will also be subsequent overhauls of them. So it's for the remainder of this, which will be a fairly intensive program throughout the life of these vehicles.
For the first 68. Got it. Okay. Thank you so much for answering the questions. Mm-hmm. And let's go to public comment on this item.
Yes, we are now opening public comment for this item number four. If we have any members of the public who wish to address the committee. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, I would like to move this item to full board with recommendation and a roll call, please.
And on that motion, to forward to the full board with a positive recommendation, Vice Chair Dorsey. Dorsey, aye. Member Engardio.
Aye.
Engardio, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have three ayes.
The motion passes. With that, Mr. Clerk, please call item number five.
Yes, item number five is a resolution approving a port commission with 340 Jefferson Street Partners LLC for approximately 3,700 square feet of a single-story restaurant space located at 340 Jefferson for a term of 10 years, effective upon approval of this resolution, with 2 5-year options to extend, and estimated to produce approximately $1.5 million in revenue over the 10-year term, with the port contributing $470,000 for improvement of these premises. Yes, and this is a port commission lease. Madam Chair.
Thank you, and today we have a support here.
Good morning, Supervisors. Good to be here again with another lease. I'm Scott Lancetel, Deputy Director of Real Estate for the Port, joined by Don Cavanaugh, our property manager. I'm here for approval of a new lease of 340 Jefferson, considering its gross value of over $1 million and term of 10 plus years. So we'd like to review the kind of just background of the leasing process for this space. 340 Jefferson has been vacant since the onset of COVID in March of 2020. After struggling to refill the space, the port engaged Maven with Port Commission's approval through a brokerage contract to solicit this space, among others, on Jefferson Street, which has proved fruitful. Maven did extensive outreach, ultimately touring the property with 20 groups, and two legitimate offers were submitted for this space specifically, one with the 340 Jefferson entity for the concept I'll review, and the other from a local pizza operator. These submissions were scored by a panel, and the Chaskaria concept, which I'll review, was selected by the team as the leading candidate. 340 Jefferson Street Partners is a group that is led by partners of the Fisherman's Wharf Revitalized group that also has other interests in the district. They have financial capability and expertise on the restaurant side, and have pulled together an operating team for this restaurant specifically that combined has over 75 years of experience in the Bay Area and with restaurants that are well known in the Bay Area. This concept, Chaskaria, is a seafood forward concept of Salvadorian cuisine. We feel that it's a very good fit for the district, a different new offering that it's a little more contemporary than some of its predecessors. The concept envisions significant improvements to the 340 Jefferson space, including kind of a facelift of the exterior, new patio improvements with furniture and umbrellas, flowers, something that'll be very accretive to the district and stretch on Jefferson from Taylor on down. The terms, it's a 10-year lease, 3,700 square feet, more or less, comparable to what we recently had approved next door, $10,000 a month in base rent plus a percentage share of sales above that. The port does have a termination right should the tenant not achieve a certain threshold of sales within the first 3 years of the lease, giving the port additional flexibility to continue to ensure that the restaurants in this area are successful and operating well. And in this case, the port supplied the tenant with roughly $125 a square foot in a tenant improvement allowance, which was funded through federal and state sources related to the America Recovery Act, which went towards economic recovery initiatives to fill vacancy within the port's portfolio. And with that, I'll open it up for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Good work. Thank you for this. Even though that I want to say that when you say contemporary, I have a little, like, it was hard for me a little bit. It's just, you know, there's just the I am, you know, grew up in Chinatown, North Beach, and there's a little bit of trying to hold on to the whole Italian seafood history and with the good, like, Chinatown dining hall experience, and thinking about how Fisherman's Wharf is, and just the wharf and waterfront is changing all across in San Francisco. And it's not easy for any of us to see those changes. But nonetheless, I think we're ready for it, and it's a necessary space to fill. So thank you so much for your work.
Thank you.
We're glad to see them coming and being in this location. I don't have any other questions. Look forward to seeing more of these spaces being filled in that area. And let's go to public comment on this item.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, we're now opening public comment for this item number 5. If we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. And with that, colleagues, I would like to move this item to full board. Oh, yeah, with full board with recommendation. And a roll call, please.
And on that motion to forward to the full board with a positive recommendation, Vice Chair Dorsey. Dorsey, aye. Member Engardio. Engardio, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have 3 ayes.
The motion passes. Thank you. Mr. Clerk, please call item number 6.
Yes, item number 6 is a resolution authorizing the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing to execute a grant agreement with the California Board of State and Community Corrections for a total amount not to exceed approximately $8 million of Proposition 47 Grant Program Cohort 4 grant funds to retroactively accept and expend those funds for a program entitled Housing Expungement and Recovery through Treatment and Support Services for costs incurred October 3rd, 2024 through June 30th, 2028, and authorizing HSH to enter into any additions, amendments, or other modifications to the grant agreement that do not materially increase the obligations nor liabilities of the city or materially decrease the benefits to the city. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we have Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing here.
Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning, Chair Chan. Good morning, Supervisors. Emily Cohen with the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. Before you today with a resolution to accept and expend Proposition 47 state grant program funds for Cohort 4 of their funding. I'm joined today by colleagues from the participating and collaborative agencies, the Department of Public Health, Sheriff's Office, and the Public Defender's Office, who are able to support with any questions that you might have. As you know, the California voters approved Prop 47 in November of 2014 to reclassify specific nonviolent drug and property offenses from felonies to misdemeanors. The California Board of State and Community Corrections manages and allocates state savings under Prop 47 for grant programs to support mental health treatment, substance use disorder, diversion, and housing services for justice-involved communities. San Francisco has received 3 prior Prop 47 grants, all of which had been administered by our friends at the Department of Public Health, and those were in 2017, 2019, and 2022. In April of 2024, BSCC issued an RFP for Cohort 4 of the Prop 47 grant program, and HSH was the lead agency in our city's application, which was from June 2024. The grant details include, essentially, the grant amount is approximately $8 million for a term of October 2024 through the end of June 2028. And the purpose of the Cohort 4 funding is to reduce incarceration and recidivism and support stability for justice-involved adults experiencing homelessness, including but not limited to the Latine and Spanish-speaking population. To achieve this, Cohort 4 proposes what we're calling the HEARTS program, Housing Expungement and Recovery Through Treatment and Support Services. While the city is still working to confirm the exact composition of this program, providers, and details, the program will include an array of services from each of our departments to support the target population of justice-involved adults, working to stabilize them through appropriate services, including but not limited to housing assessment and services, case management, peer navigation, behavioral health, treatment, and legal services. Just a little more detail here on the budget. The program funds 4 departments, as I mentioned, including the Department of Public Health, Sheriff, Public Defenders, and the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. The grant also provides funding for project evaluation, monitoring, and indirect costs. And no matching funds were required. However, the city did include approximately $1.2 million in leveraged funds to the grant application to make it more competitive. And these funds consist of existing portions of contracts that HSH and the Sheriff's Office are already engaged in for this population. And I will stop there and happy to take any questions, or my colleagues behind me can help me take questions.
Item 6 is a resolution that would retroactively approve the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing to accept and expend $8 million from the California Board of State and Community Corrections and then enter into a related grant agreement for 3 years with that entity. The grant would reimburse the city for a program for justice-involved adults that at this point includes public health treatment beds, potentially transitional housing, and then legal expungement for clean slate applications. The exact service composition is still under development, according to HSH. And so it's the actual uses of the funds in terms of what services are going to be provided, where they are, who's going to do them, is not known at this time. So we're recommending that HSH, once they enter into the grant agreement and finalize the kind of program that they've described, actually just submit a short letter to the Board of Supervisors to be included in the legislative file for this item so that you all know what this money is being used for. And we recommend approval of item 6.
Thank you. When do we, I mean, I think here's a couple of questions. First of all, it's retroactive. And my assumption, it sounds like you have not spent the grant because you're still developing this program. Is that correct?
Yes. Thank you for the question, Chair Chan. Yes, it is retroactive because the start date of the grant was the same day we received notification that we were going to get the grant. So we still had some work to do, and we need to go back to the state with more finalized proposal of how we're going to operationalize it, which we can't do until we enter into the agreement. So it's a little chicken and egg, but it did take some time from getting the award notification, working through our internal processes, multi-departmental effort, and then once we get the approval for the accept and expend, we'll go back to the state with the final plan, and happy to share that here as well.
And when do you plan to do that, to share, come back and share with that information?
Yeah, I think by the fall we would be reasonable.
Of this year, right?
Yes.
Okay. I think I'm eager to learn more about, like, just the implementation. I want to say that oftentimes I feel like that when we start having conversation about Prop 47 in general, I think the failure is not the policy itself. I think the failure is the lack of investments and funding of providing exit programming for people who are exiting the system. And because of that, I think that we left a lot of people behind mm-hmm. and not being able to show the results. And when someone exits that system, they're not able to have house and jobs and all the necessity that they need to reestablish their livelihood. Is very difficult to expect them to be able to not recidivate. And I look forward to seeing this, learning just more about how you're going to develop that program. So can we follow up, like, say, maybe October or November, that you come back and not only with the report, but potentially a hearing and just kind of see where we land?
Yeah, we'd be happy to come back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And so with that, let's go to public comment on this item.
Yes, we're now opening public comment for this item number 6. If you have any members of the public who wish to address this committee. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, I would like to move this item to full board with recommendation and a roll call, please.
And on that motion, to forward to the full board with a positive recommendation, Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Member Engardio. Engardio, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have 3 ayes.
The motion passes. Mr. Clerk, please call item number 7.
Yes, item number 7 is a resolution approving for purposes of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986 as amended the issuance of tax-exempt obligations pursuant to a plan of finance by California Statewide Communities Development Authority in an aggregate principal amount not to exceed $165 million to be issued by the Sequoias San Francisco for the purpose of financing, including reimbursing and refinancing the acquisition, construction, renovation, equipping, and furnishing of senior residential and care services and certain other matters relating thereto. Madam Chair.
We have the Controller's Office of Public Finance here.
Good morning, Chair Chan and Supervisors. Keith Savini from the Controller's Office of Public Finance. Also in attendance is Mark Shores, the VP of Operations and Finance at Sequoia Living, if there are any specific questions about the project. Just a reminder, know you don't need a reminder, but for the benefit of the public, the Tax Equity and the Fiscal Responsibility Act, or TEFRA, allows the tax exemption of interest on certain types of debt issued through joint powers authorities. In this case, the proposed financing is to be issued through California Statewide Communities Development Authority, CSCDA, which is a joint powers authority to which the City and County of San Francisco is a participating member. CSCDA is authorized to issue bonds, including refunding previously issued debt. Federal tax law requires that the governing body of the jurisdiction in which the project is located approve the financing and the project after providing the opportunity for a duly noticed public hearing. The public hearing notice was published on the Comptroller's Office of Public Finance website on May 8th, and the hearing was held by telephone on May 15th. There were no comments from the public or received through the public hearing process. The project purpose, the proceeds from the sale of the bonds will be used to finance the construction, rehabilitation, and furnishing of facilities located at 1400 Geary Boulevard, which is owned and operated by the borrower, in an aggregate principal amount not to exceed $60 million, and also to refinance prior obligations issued for the benefit of the borrower in amount not to exceed $22 million. This is part of a larger issuance in the amount not to exceed $165 million that will be used to finance and refinance the borrower's facilities in Marin, Contra Costa, and San Mateo counties. And those jurisdictions will consider approval separate from the hearing here today. Again, approval of this legislation will have no fiscal impact to the city and county since it's not obligated for payment on the bonds. Just a few brief remarks about the borrower. Sequoia Living, Inc. is a Bay Area nonprofit continuing care retirement community that provides joyful living environments, assisted living, memory care, and skilled nursing for residents age 60 plus. It was founded in 1958, and it offers a diverse network of life plan communities, affordable housing, and community service programs to approximately 1,000 residents as of last December. And they have locations in San Francisco, Green Bay, Portola Valley, and Walnut Creek. Sequoia San Francisco is a licensed residential care facilities for the elderly facility, and it's located near Japantown and Cathedral Hill. Concludes my presentation, and again, Mark Shores, the VP of Operations and Finance at Sequoia Living, is here if there are any specific project questions. Thank you.
Thank you. The question that I have is, with this revenue obligation bond with $165 million, and does it actually cover only the San Francisco facility? Or I thought you mentioned also cover outside of San Francisco?
That's right. The $165 covers the facilities in Marin, Contra Costa, and San Mateo counties.
Well, I think this is like a kind of just out of my curiosity and just a technical question. So technically, then San Francisco can support and approve this sales, but that actually also cover outside of San Francisco. I think you mentioned that it also gonna have to receive approval in those jurisdictions as well. But
right.
Does that mean that is actually supported by multiple counties or just San Francisco County alone?
Multiple counties, yeah. My understanding is the TEFRA hearing was held in Walnut Creek last night, and the other Contra Costa and San Mateo counties will hold a similar hearing. And that will support the total issuance of $165 million. But today, we're just approving the $60 million issuance for San Francisco.
I see, out of the $165.
Right.
Understood. Yeah. Thank you so much for that clarification.
Sure.
I learn something new every day, but I think you're one of the offices or departments that you feel free to remind me exactly what I'm talking about today. I appreciate the reminder. It's very technical, and I appreciate that. So with that, I don't see any other name on the roster. Let's go to public comment on this item. Thank you so much.
Yes, if we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee regarding this item number 7, now is your opportunity. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, I would like to move this item to full board with recommendation and a roll call, please.
And on that motion to forward to the full board with a positive recommendation, Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Member Engardio.
Aye.
Engardio, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have three ayes.
The motion passes. And with that, Mr. Clerk, please call item number 8.
Yes, item number 8 is a resolution approving a second amendment to the grant agreement between San Francisco Adult Probation Department and the Regents of the University of California on behalf of its San Francisco campus for case management services to increase the not to exceed grant amount by approximately $8.5 million for a total not to exceed amount of approximately $17.9 million and to extend the grant term by 2 years from June 30th, 2025 for a total term of November 1st, 2022 through June 30th, 2027. Madam Chair.
Thank you, and we have adult probation here.
Good morning, Supervisors. Tyrus Madison for the San Francisco Adult Probation Department, and we are requesting approval of an extension of the UCSF CASC grant agreement. UCSF provides critical clinical and reentry CASC management services, as well as group classes and medication management at the CASC. And the CASC is our department's one-stop behavioral health and reentry center. We're requesting this to extend for the full 5 years that's allowed, and then also to exceed the amount of $10 million, which will go up to about $17 million once we go through the 5 years. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Item 8 is a resolution that approves an amendment to a grant agreement between adult probation and UCSF. The amendment extends the agreement by 2 years through June 2027 and then increases the not to exceed amount by $17.8 million. This grant was competitively awarded to UCSF following an RFP that the Adult Probation Department issued in 2022. For which UCSF was the highest scoring proposer in three categories that are included in the contract. The grant funds case management at the CASC. We reviewed the performance of those services. They appear to be working well. And we summarized the budget on page 20 of our report. The not to exceed amount in the resolution is built on the grant budget. The grant budget was underspent for the past couple years. And so if you look at the actual spending on the grant and then the budgeted spending this year and then what they're budgeting next year plus a contingency, we actually think that they only need $17.1 million rather than the $17.8 million that's in the resolution. So we think that they should enter into a grant for $17.1 million because that's what they will spend. And that the board should reduce the resolutions not to exceed amount to reflect that new agreement. Happy to answer any other questions.
Thank you. Could adult probation explain to us why, the program completion was not tracked for the fiscal year 23-24?
Yes. We had staff that was maybe one staff was left in the reentry division, and so we weren't able to do all of those things. If you can recall, we were here about a year ago for some other extensions, and we had made the commitment that we were going to make sure we get everything in place and have enough staff. And so for the current fiscal year, that's why you see information in on the first quarter of fiscal year 24-25 in the second quarter. And so now that we're staffed up, we've completed all initial site visits, and then they are meeting their performance measures.
Thank you. And this is sort of in advance of what it's going to come in the next few weeks. You know, I think that with that, just kind of about staffing at the adult probation, and I we've been having those conversations and concerns about staffing and probation officers' caseloads and also outstanding cases that are supposed to be closed and yet have not been closed. And we'd love to see, you know, when you do come before us again during the budget, help us understand better, you know, just the caseloads across the board for probation officers, but also reentry staffing, help us understand just the ratio of caseload ratio and how many outstanding cases since last year that you were recognizing, I think almost in thousands of waiting to be closed, and what progress have you made to date? Sounds good?
Yes, I'm making notes now.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your work. I think, again, this is a very critical piece of adult probation and programming. I look forward to seeing and learning more of it and then to learn about the results and that more percentage actual tracking of the program completion. And I think that the fact that it's under spent in terms of funding, I take that as a sign that, you know, again, probably involved with staffing, and that you, in the if need be, that we can have more discussion about what it actually looked like. But are you in agreement to amend the not to exceed amount?
Yes, we're in agreement, and you're correct. The reason that the grant agreement amounts are underspent is because, similar to all of our other partner departments, behavioral health specialists it's very competitive, and it's been very hard for UCSF and other places to actually fill those positions, but they are being able to fill those positions now. So given that that's based on prior spending, but going forward, we are okay with the reduction to 17.1.
Okay, thank you for that. And then so with that, let's go to public comments on this item.
Yes, we're now opening public comment for this item number 8. If we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, I would first like to make the amendment to reduce the not to exceed amount as proposed by budget and legislative analysts and agreed by adult probation, and then move the amended legislation to full board with recommendation and a roll call, please.
And on that motion, to amend the proposed resolution to accept the BLA's recommendation to reduce the not to exceed amount to $17.1 million, and to forward that resolution to the full board with a positive recommendation, has amended. Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Member Engardio. Engardio, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have 3 ayes.
The motion passes. And with that, Mr. Clerk, please call item number 9.
Yes, item number 9 is a resolution retroactively authorizing the Department of Public Health to accept and expend a grant in the amount of $265,000 from the California Department of Healthcare Services through the Blue Cross of California Partnership Plan, Inc., or Anthem, for participation in a program entitled California Advancing and Innovating Medi-Cal, or Cal-AIM, Capacity Building Incentive Payment Program for the period of July 1st, 2024 through June 30th, 2025. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we have the Department of Public Health here.
Good morning, Chair Chan, Vice Chair Dorsey, Supervisor Engardio. My name is Alex Boyder. I'm an administrative analyst with the San Francisco Health Network. I'm here today to present a retroactive grant accept and expend from the California Department of Healthcare Services through Blue Cross of California Partnership Plan, or Anthem. This grant will support the Department of Public Health's Bridge and Engagement Services Team, or BEST Neighborhoods, in providing rapid, trauma-informed, behavioral and physical health assessments, community-based therapeutic interventions, and linkages to resources. This grant will support staff at RAMS, who will support the peers on the BEST Neighborhood Team. The peers provide linkage, engagement, and housing navigation to clients and people experiencing homelessness. The grant total is $265,000. This grant is retroactive because DPH received notice of the grant on March 31st, 2025, after the project's start date of July 1st, 2024. DPH then brought this item to the board after going through the fiscal approval process, including controller's office review and approval. We respectfully are requesting retroactive approval of this grant, accept and expend. Thank you for your time. Happy to answer any questions that you may have.
So almost a year later, then you're getting this grant. Help me understand then, how has it been funded if this program has been undergoing?
So the way that this worked was we actually received a separate grant that was related to this from both Anthem and the San Francisco SFHP. Anthem didn't have money in the same way that they intended to, and so awarded us this money separately instead. So it took us a long time working with the deputy city attorney and Anthem on the correct way that the grant should work and how it should be structured.
And I'm sure it was painful for you, but help me understand, how much is it then initial in a separate pot of money that's funding this program? So how much was provided? Was it the same exact dollar amount, or is it the majority of the dollar amount?
The way that this worked was we received $2.7 million from SFHP and Anthem combined. Mm-hmm. And then Anthem provided just a portion of the grant. They provided $59,000 in the same way that SFHP provided it. And then the $265,000 that we're talking about today, it's now a year later.
And is there a way to calculate how much is the capacity building incentive payment program actually cost total? Is it more than the $2.7 million initial?
So that the IPP is a grant program, yeah, that we've received varying different awards for different activities through, and it's come a variety of different ways. I think we've had several awards that we've brought before you. We can certainly get your office a copy of all the IPP awards that we've received.
I'm just a little confused about, generally speaking, like, this is, like, I think few months late. I totally understand this is almost a year later for a program that's been going on for quite some time. And so it just perked my interest of, like, then how are we running our money in program? You know, if you're this behind on a accept and expand grant, and then, so then what now if this program's been going on for the entire fiscal year?
Anna Vlizik, Government Affairs Manager at DPH. I'm not sure we have the answers to your questions right now, but we're very happy to circle back with your office and get those answers to you as soon as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of those, like, notes that I'm going to make, if I may, you know, about, like, just grants funding in general, that for our existing program that we funded through general fund, and that now, I guess I just want to understand the sources of how we fund our program, and should something actually come one fiscal year later, like, where does this money go and how does it account for? And yeah, so thank you. Colleagues, I have a lot of questions about things like this, but I think this one, we're gonna move this forward today. So with that, let's go to public comment on this item.
Yes, if you have any members of the public who wish to address this committee regarding this item number 9, now is your opportunity. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. And colleagues, I would like to move this item with full board with recommendation, but I'm going to pin this thought in my head and for the next week budget process. And so with that, a roll call, please.
And on that motion, to forward to the full board with a positive recommendation, Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Member Engardio. Engardio, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have 3 ayes.
The motion passes. Mr. Clerk, please call item 10 and 11 together.
Yes, item numbers 10 and 11 are resolutions retroactively authorizing the Department of Public Health to accept and expand monetary gifts in the following amounts from the Epic Systems Corporation. Item number 10 is in the amount of $37,500 to support the Community Resource Directory and Behavioral Health Project for the period of July 1st, 2023 through June 30th, 2025. And item number 11 is entitled, is a gift entitled Rams Richmond Area Multi-Services in the amount of $37,000 to help low-income and at-risk populations for the period of July 1st, 2023 through June 30th, 2024. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And again, we have Department of Public Health here.
Good morning, Chair Chan, supervisors. My name is Jeff Scarafia. I'm the deputy CIO at DPH. I'm here today to present two retroactive accept and expends for gifts from Epic Systems Corporation. As a reminder, Epic Systems is an electronic health records vendor that we use within DPH across our hospitals, clinics, and many other aspects of our department. The first gift, file 250544, will support the Community Resource Directory and Epic for Behavioral Health at DPH. A Community Resource Directory is sort of an electronic system that allows us to conduct closed-loop referrals for social care. So if you think about problems that would impact health, whether that's nutrition, aka food banks, or perhaps housing impacts, it allows us to refer out to those services and in a closed-loop fashion understand who is actually utilizing those services. The amount for this gift is $37,500. The second gift, file 250545, will be used to support an existing city contract for vocational rehab programs with Richmond Area Multi-Services, which we affectionately know as RAMS. This is an existing city contract in the behavioral health area where Richmond Area Multi-Services provides counseling and oversight for individuals who are essentially performing internships within the DPH IT department. They receive skills and training as well as jobs experience through this program. The amount for this gift is $37,000. Both of these gifts are retroactive. We received notice of the first gift on March 2nd, 2023. We received notice of the second gift on January 4th, 2024. Both items were introduced in May 2025 after a thorough review process, and again, that's going to be the reason for our delay there, with the City Ethics Committee around accepting these gifts from an existing city vendor. We respectfully ask for your retroactive approval of these gifts and welcome any questions.
I mean, this is beyond retroactive. I mean, I and this is, again, right, like, I'm not going to trip on a $37,000 grant. Like, I'm not tripping on a Epic system that we've been using. In fact, I think that we are going to have this conversation about Epic. Like, it's expiring, MOU. We're going to actually really talk about Epic as the Epic version in 2025, what it actually looks like. It's very different from 7 years ago. So grand scheme of things, I'm not tripping on $37,000. What I am, again, is this is more like for DPH and overall, and allude to the conversation we're about to have next week, is that, like, how does your accounting work? Like, if you are going to have these grants at a later time, be it $37,000 or be it $265,000, like, how do you keep things afloat? Like, this is a year later. I mean, were you missing the $37,000? Are you anticipating when we actually approve the budget? Like, during that year, like, I'm just kind of a little bit confused. I don't think you should answer that. You should leave.
Yeah. Good morning, supervisors.
Because your review process is quite long.
Good morning, supervisors. My name is Greg Wong. I work with the Accept and Expend Unit. A lot of the Epic gifts were impacted by the review by the city attorney. And the city attorney was also working with the Ethics Commission to see if these gifts, because Epic is a current vendor
with
the San Francisco City and County.
I see.
And to be able to receive basically gifts of funding from this existing vendor, we wanted to see if this would comply with the BS legislation. And that's why this went through basically two rounds with the city attorney and the San Francisco Ethics Commission.
I mean, I can see that. I mean, I can see that as a contractor, but then these gifts are so small, right? But this is, I would say, the fourth in a row that comes in from Epic. And, and so the question back on both DPH and Epic and city attorney, and as the MOU starting to come, like, let's actually have a minute to say, well, you know, should these gifts become part of the MOU? So-called gift, like, you know, becomes part of the MOU, and how do we actually review it, that relationship? And I just really urge that we have that moment. I'm not going to give DPH staff a hard time. I shouldn't. Again, like, that's not my intent. I'm just having a conversation about both entire for DPH, for retroactive. I think we were doing kind of, we were making progress, Greg. Like, I think that a couple years ago, we start to we have quite a bit of retroactive items that was kind of similar to this period. And I think we got better, you know, because we knew that it was COVID, and then we got better, and then now, like, here we are. So, but I think that Epic, it's a whole different ballgame in this area. So I'm going to, not going to belate the point, but I think my point is clear. Let's have those conversation. And thank you. Thank you so much for your work on this. And let's go to public comment on this item, unless you have any other remarks you would like to make.
A lot of comments.
Thank you. Let's go to public comment on this two item.
Yes, we're now opening public comment for both of these items, 10 and 11. If we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, again, you heard my concerns, but I think today we're going to move these two items to full board with recommendation and a roll call, please.
And on that motion, to forward both resolutions to the full board with a positive recommendation, Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Member Engardio. Engardio, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have three ayes.
The motion passes. And Mr. Clerk, please call item number 12.
Yes, item number 12 is a resolution retroactively authorizing the Department of Public Health to accept and expend a gift valued in the amount of approximately $1.7 million from the San Francisco Public Health Foundation in support of various Department of Public Health program needs for the period of July 1st, 2024 through June 30th, 2025. Madam Chair.
Thank you. Department of Public Health.
Good morning, Chair Chan, Vice Chair Dorsey, and Supervisor Engardio. My name is Carol Taniguchi, and I am the Deputy Director of Primary Care in the department. I'm here today to present a retroactive gift for Accept and Expend from the San Francisco Public Health Foundation. This gift provided support for various programs across the department. The gift will support things like, different divisions like primary care, maternal and child health, behavioral health services, and Laguna Honda Hospital. This gift did contribute to materials and supplies, including some dental supplies, a mobile x-ray machine at our Southeast Family Health Center, which is in the Bayview as part of the clinic rebuild there. You may remember we rebuilt that clinic a couple years ago, as well as client support services such as food for patients in our Food is Medicine program, emergency clothing, therapeutic assessments and toys, patient gift bags and holiday meals, as well as other client support items for health at home, like bed rails, shower grab bars, and raised toilet seats. The gifts in total are about $1.7 million, and the gift is retroactive because DPH got notice of the gift October of 2024 after the project start date, which is July 1 of 2024. DPH brought this item to the Board of Supervisors after going through the fiscal approval process, including the Controller's Office review and approval. We are respectively requesting retroactive approval, and I am happy to take questions.
Thank you. And how did these grants come about from San Francisco Foundation then? So is that like they have their own independent parallel process and suddenly decided that, you know what, like we want to support this maternal health in Bayview, therefore, or whatever program, you know, and therefore we decided that we just want to donate, but we want to donate for the work that's been done. How does that work?
Yeah, so we have a longstanding relationship with the foundation, and every year they actually ask us what our needs might be for the next year, and we provide them with a sort of a needs assessment, and then they go through the process of deciding after they request from us what they might want to fund.
And then, so are these then means without that, are you in deficit? Will you be in deficit? for some of these programming?
With the needs assessment, this is a projection of what that we might need to cover existing services that we are providing. It's not an example of what a deficit may be. It's just that what we project to be, and this is what the organization is willing to provide.
And so with this, in this case, right, like these are sort of your ongoing, you know, services and programming, and then now we're doing the accept and expand. I understand that, you know, this is from San Francisco, you know, San Francisco Public Health Foundation. And so will then this dollar amount as you accept and expand it for the next fiscal year, or is this for the current fiscal, like, because it's retroactive?
Yeah, it will be covering this fiscal year from July 1st, 2024 to June 30th, 2025.
You see kind of why I'm confused? So then, like, while I can understand, like, you didn't get this grant until, like, you know, last year sometime, and then you go through a review process, but you're technically not using this grant from the foundation as a backfilling for your deficits. What you technically assuming is on top of what you actually already budgeted for these ongoing programming. And yet you're accounting it for current fiscal year and you're not accounting it for the upcoming projected fiscal years as your part of your budget.
We have submitted a needs assessment for fiscal year 25-26 through the annual budget. This is a separate needs assessment. So this current fiscal needs assessment had to go through the accept and expend process so that we could submit for the fiscal year 25-26 needs assessment through the budget.
I'm not going to belabor the point because it's similar to the previous questions, but I think you know what I'm asking. What I'm asking is that you're funded by many sources, general fund, federal funds, and state, and in this case is a philanthropic dollars. And this philanthropic dollars, which is you're now retroactive for the current fiscal year. And it seems like you're doing this on an annual basis, like here's our needs and here's a list of manuals of things that please consider funding. And then they pick and choose what they want because it's a manual of options. They say, okay, now we decided and to then fund you. But instead of saying that it should be moving forward of going for this upcoming fiscal year, you're actually adding to the existing already approved budget.
Yes, thank you, Chair Chan, for the question. If I can paraphrase what my colleague Greg Wong just said, you are correct. We are asking for this fiscal year. We are changing that process. So in this ASO, we are now including the next fiscal year's needs assessment so that we can proactively include that for next fiscal year. This will be the last time, and we will be improving our processes on retroactivity. Your point is well taken, but that is part of our budget submission for next fiscal year.
But my assumption is, though, that the grants coming from foundation is not guaranteed. Right? I mean, just none of these, like, states or federal grants are often guaranteed, but there are going to be your assumption in your projected, is what you're saying, right?
Yes, this is a not to exceed amount of 1.7 million. They have given us an estimated amount of what needs to be fundraised. So about 817,000 would need
Understood.
To be fundraised.
So then now you will have a commitment and a conversation, say, hey, you know, will you then commit to that not to exceed amount for the fiscal year 25-26? Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for answering my question. Thank you so much for your work on this. And let's go to public comment on this item.
Yes, we're now opening public comment for this item number 12, if we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, thank you so much for indulging me on that line of questioning, and thank you so much, DPH, for answering those questions. And with that, colleagues, I would like to move this item to full board with recommendation and a roll call, please.
And on that motion to forward this resolution to the full board with a positive recommendation, Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Member Engardio. Engardio, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have three ayes.
The motion passes. And with that, Mr. Clerk, please call item number 13.
Yes, item number 13 is an ordinance authorizing the clerk of the Board of Supervisors to sell licenses to third parties to legislative management software, system software developed by the clerk's office and amending the administrative code to establish a fund to receive revenue. The clerk's office collects for licensing the legislative management system software to third parties and from interdepartmental fund transfers from city departments for use of the legislative management system. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we have all four of the clerks here.
Good afternoon, Chair Chan, members of the board. I'm Dr. Edward Diasis. I am the CFO for the Office of the Clerk of the Board. I want to thank Greg Wagner for working with us and his staff on a path forward on this ordinance. This is an ordinance for the legislative management system. We do have an agreement, and I'll be reading the amendment into the record. The amendment is just one. It's on page 2, section A. There is a phrase that says, the Legislative Management System Fund is established as a category fund for the purpose of receiving revenue for the sale of software license for the Legislative Management System. We are requesting amendment to delete as a Category 8 fund, and I believe we have agreement with controller on this path forward. And City Attorney Brad Rusi has approved this amendment as to form. I'm available for any questions you may have.
Great, and just wanted to understand, so we don't need a continuance today for further discussion, and this is ready to go? I see nodding. Yes, thank you. So with that, let's go to public comment on this item.
Yes, if we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee regarding this item number 13, and that was your opportunity. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, this item is continued from May 21st. We had a conversation about this, and again, thank you so much, Controller Greg Wagner, for working with our clerks on this, and thank you so much for your work on it as well. We appreciate the effort that allowing us to be able to generate some revenue from the system, which our clerks work so hard to establish. And with that, colleagues, I would like to make the motion to amend as proposed by our clerk's office, striking the line of identifying the fund as a Category 8 fund and move the amended item to full board with recommendation and a roll call, please.
And on that motion, to first amend the ordinance as so stated by Dr. Diasis, into the record and to continue and to forward this ordinance to the full board with a positive recommendation as amended. Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Member Engardio.
Aye.
Engardio, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have three ayes.
The motion passes. Thank you. And Mr. Clerk, I believe we do have an outstanding item. Could you please call that item again?
Yes, to remind the public, we are returning to this item 3. Which is a resolution authorizing the Recreation and Park Department to accept and expend cash and or in-kind grants from the San Francisco Irish Famine Memorial Committee, valued at approximately $500,000 for the San Francisco Irish Famine Memorial Project, effective upon approval of this resolution through notice of substantial completion. Madam Chair.
Thank you, and we're at Rec and Park here. Thank you so much for making to the meeting. You're almost. But could you help me understand? I think that you have a request for a continuance to a very date specific of September 24th. And could you articulate why?
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Supervisor Chan. I am Lamont Bishop, Senior Manager of Policy and Public Affairs at Rec and Park. And we are here on behalf of the San Francisco Irish Famine Committee. They requested that a continuance because there are some administrative items that they need to resolve before bringing it to the board for presentation. And so I'm here to ask for that continuance to a date certain of September 24th.
I understood. I just wanted to articulate my concern is because I have met with them and I think that there was an eagerness to get this done and actually trying to, it's been a long time coming.
Yes, it has.
For this project, they have raised funds and they have a beautiful design that I thought that, you know, in fact, when they first went to the Rec and Park Commission Capital Committee and then getting the full commission commission approval, I was very excited about it. So I'm really sorry to hear that the continuance is rather significant. It's not, and I just want to say I'm open to hear this at a sooner date. So I'm also happy to entertain it to continue call chair instead of date certain on September 24th. But it sounds to me that both you and the project sponsors are really set on the September 24th date.
That would be great, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you. I want to say once you do that date certain, I cannot bring it back anytime sooner, which is July or even earlier in September. I just want to be clear about that. Thank you so much for being here. Colleagues, let's go to public comment on this item then. Thank you.
Yes, we are now opening public comment for any members of the public in attendance who wish to address this committee regarding this item number 3. This is your opportunity. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. While I am disappointed to hear this, could you elaborate just a tiny little bit more about what are the administrative items that...
I am not aware of what those are, but I can find out for you and get back to you.
I would really appreciate it. I want to be respectful of your request. I will make the motion to continue to September 24th. Once that date is set, I cannot change because it's not announced. I hope that you made that clear to the project sponsor as well, like that September 24th date is set. So with that, a motion to continue this item to September 24th.
And on that motion to continue this resolution to the September 24th meeting of this committee, Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Member Engardio. Engardio, aye. Chair Chan. Chan, aye. We have 3 ayes.
Thank you, Chair Chan and supervisors.
Mr. Clerk, do we have any other items or business before us today?
Madam Chair, that concludes our business.
We do have our 1:30 Budget and Appropriation Committee today, and so with that, this meeting is adjourned.